This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, BFM 89.9. I'm Philip C, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Now, the oil and gas sector had a turbulent last year. Remember when oil prices fell to zero? Many players felt they were staring at the edge of the abyss. Fast forward to today, oil prices have stabilized around US $70-$75, and capital investments are beginning to return. Better days perhaps for most, but Dilium has had its fair share of challenges. We speak to newly minted CEO Rahman Rao Abdullah about how this diversified oil and gas specialist is navigating these trying times. Welcome to the Breakfast Grill, Rao. So let me just ask you, you've been in the job for 2 months. What has been the board's marching orders to you?
Good question. The marching orders are very simple. You know, we are very focused in Malaysia. How do we go beyond Malaysia? How do we strengthen the bench? Yeah. And also, how do we look at getting more efficiency into the system? If I dwell a little bit more, as an industry, you know, it's not just Dilium. As an industry, oil and gas industry has been one of the most inefficient industry globally, yeah, because the prices were high, everybody having a good time, and we allowed inefficiency to creep in. So when the price came down, everybody was crying over it. But the real issue is not the price. Yes, it is an issue. Price is an issue. But the real issue is that we did not know how to run a lean and mean business, you know, because we got used to being so inefficient. We did things the old way. There was a lot of reluctance to change. That has, to some extent, gone through a revolution. And it's still going through that revolution. Yeah. So here I am. I'm trying to bring all the learnings of my 26 years to see how I can move Dilium to a different stage.
And you have a very challenging mandate, because one thing to note about Dilium is that it's got a huge exposure in Malaysia, as you were saying just now. But I do think we need to just bring up very quickly, I think a couple of weeks back, the MACC issued the RM 1 million compound over the legal scheme involving, you know, several directors and subcontractors of Primera, your subsidiary. Now, these executives, they've left. You've replaced the previous CEO. Can we really put this saga behind us, or are there more investigations continuing?
Philip, I can tell you this. We see this as a very positive step. Yeah, you saw the announcement. We see this as a very positive step. We are now very focused on moving forward, and that is why I'm here.
And those investigations, are they over already, or are they still continuing on then?
Again, Philip, I don't want to dwell too much into it, because, you know, some of them are still ongoing. You read about it in the announcement that we made to Bursa.
Right.
It's quite clear there. So I wouldn't want to dwell too much into it. Like I said, the focus is on moving forward, and I'm very excited about it. If you ask more questions on that front, I'll be more than happy to share on what plans we have, what I want to do.
I think one of the things that's very interesting about this issue is that one of the repercussions is that Petronas has suspended you from participating in the national oil company's tenders and contracts, right? Is that still ongoing, or has that relationship been restored?
It's only one subsidiary is affected by that. I think people need to understand that. It's not the whole of Dilium. It's just one product line. We have many, many different product lines.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll stop with that, because we will definitely be back in business on that front as well.
I see. Now, that's where I think it's worth looking at, because you just released your first half numbers. You know, the bottom line was pretty good. But if you look at the top line, your 20% lower revenue, right, driven by pressure on the power and machinery and integrated corrosion business, what drove that pressure, downward pressure there? Was Petronas partly contributing to that pressure there?
See, people have to understand, we are not working in a normal environment. Yeah, we are in a pandemic. So the COVID restrictions, the quarantine restriction, does not help. So let me give you, let me enlighten you here, Philip. Yeah? In the past, an employee goes offshore, catches a job, is there for 28 days or 21 days, and he comes back, he takes 2 weeks break, and then he goes back. Yeah? So it's only back for 14 days. It takes a break. Today, what happens is that before you go offshore, you go into a quarantine, 14 days. And then you go and catch the job, and then you come back, and you take another 14 days quarantine before you go back home. So 28 days is gone into an unproductive time. So we can't ramp up crew. Even if we do ramp up crew, the customers don't have that crew to be there to monitor the job as well. So what is happening today, Philip, is that the utilization of crew, the utilization of tools are not helping us on the top line. Yeah, that's the real issue here. And on top of that, with the pandemic, lack of movement, not easily available, you know, goods in and out, it does hamper some of the projects as well. Because if you want to order something, it takes longer lead time. You need to plan ahead of time. Those are the things that's affecting us. The job is there. It's just the pandemic is what's holding back.
So if you unpack both elements, right, I can get the point that the services part would be quite affected because you have lower utilization of your crew and resources. But your more distribution element like power and the distribution piece, is that more affected by just that the pandemic has also affected your suppliers and the actual clients that you work with?
It does. It does, because some of these equipments required to be installed, you know, people need to go and install it. There are times when they can't even, I'll give you an example, right? In the month of July, June and July, for example, in Labuan, the base was closed for 2 weeks. No movement to offshore. Yeah, similar things happens in plants as well. They shut it down the moment they find a COVID case. They shut the whole place down. They do, you know, do a health check on the rest of the employees. So a lot of disruption on that front. It doesn't help.
But you're kind of alluding that the work is there. Does that mean that if we look at the second half of this year, the outlook would be much better? Would you give us a sense of how much then your top line will improve in the second half of the year as work begins to resume back to normal?
It all depends on how soon we come back to the normal working conditions. Yeah, there are some talks about it. We don't know when. Yeah, and we have clearly mentioned that in our analyst results that we are looking at a better Q4. Yeah, exactly. I can't tell you because you know how it works. Yeah, I can't share a lot of stuff with you on those things. But yes, our Q4 will look better. The only concern there is Q4 usually a monsoon time, you know, so that will have some effect on our activity, but we think it'll be a much better Q4.
And you know, when you give the rationale and reasons, a lot of this is hinged on what happens in Malaysia. And in your first response, right, about the marching orders to the board, their instruction to you was diversify the business, get out of Malaysia, or don't be too dependent on Malaysia, right? What is the strategy then to go beyond Malaysia? How fast can we remove our over-reliance on Malaysia then?
Okay. You know, it's a very good question, Philip, you know, but I just want to add a little bit more color to your question, yeah? In Southeast Asia or Asia Pacific in general, yeah, if you look at Asia Pacific, there are three countries that are net exporter of oil. Yeah, that's Malaysia, Brunei, Australia. Yeah, the others are all net importers. Okay, Vietnam used to be for a while, but now I think they're back to net importer. So, oil and gas industry in Malaysia, it's not just Delium is dependent on it. The whole country is dependent on it. That's a reality. You can't take that away, yeah? So this industry, the oil and gas industry in Malaysia will continue to be our beacon, yeah? We will continue to focus on it. I just wanted to make that point very clear because this is where our base is. This is where our strength is. Yes, we have to look at outside. We are looking at outside. That's where I step in, yeah? I've been 26 years with the company, with my previous company in the oil and gas industry. I have great network. And like I told you earlier, you know, I was running a business that was 13 billion ringgit worth of the business with 9,000 employees and had a great access to just not Asia Pacific, globally. Yeah. So we will look into it, but we are not going to rush into it and make silly mistakes.
Mm. So I want to just build on that. What does it take to go overseas? You kind of alluded that it's part of the network. Does that mean partnerships and joint ventures are something we should be looking out for? And does it mean pressure on margins as you try to build market presence as you go overseas then?
We are very cognizant of that, you know, but we don't want to bite more than what we can chew.
Hmm.
I'm very careful. You see, that's one thing that I've learned in the last 26 years. I've seen the cycles many, many times. I've seen businesses we built and we exit, you know, and so on and so forth. So all that learning I'm bringing to Dilium, you know. So we're going to step. I'm not going to say it's going to be a JV. I'm not going to say it's going to be a collaboration. I'm not going to say it's going to be acquisition, but it will some form of that mode. So you got to, this time next year when I talk to you, I probably will have a little bit more crystal clear strategy.
And I guess I would like to stretch it a bit further. Any ambition, like how much percentage of overseas will contribute to the bottom line in 5 years, 10 years time? Are we talking 50% or are we talking 30 or 20% in your view?
Philip, you're not going to get the answer from me on that, you know, because I will be misleading people if I say anything with 6 weeks being in this job. Yeah. And I will not be telling you the truth if I do that. I need more time on that front. I have something in my head, but that's just me.
Okay. On The Breakfast Grill today, we speak to the CEO of Dilium Berhad, Encik Rahman Rao Abdullah, about the future plans of this oil and gas specialist. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. Today with us on The Breakfast Grill is CEO of oil and gas specialist Dilium Berhad, Rahman Rao Abdullah. Now, if I want to unpack your business, you've got three core segments: power machinery, oil field services, and integrated corrosion solutions. Perhaps you can enlighten us, right? How do the three businesses interact with each other? And what synergies are there between these three core segments then?
That's my focus area has been in the last 2-3 weeks, Philip. I'll be very honest with you. There's been very little interaction between the product line. I come from the world where we had 13 different product lines. And we used to work on silos in the past. That is where we see a biggest gain we can make. You know, information is key. Yeah. Efficiency can be driven by sharing information, best practices, and so on and so forth. A lot of that is not is something that could be done better. It's there, but it could be done better. And that's where my focus has been in the last 2 weeks, breaking down the barriers, you know, working instead of working silos, you know, breaking down the barriers. So I've been working very hard on that. And that's been the last 2 weeks, been focused on that front. I think there's a lot of efficiencies can be brought into that.
And when you think about efficiencies, are you thinking more in terms of it being able to drive better economies of scale from a cost side, or that you share information and so then you are able to cross-sell much better?
Both, top side and bottom as well, you know, because there are sometimes information that the other P&M may have could bring additional revenue opportunity for oil field services. That's on one side. The other side of it is that we can do more with the same people that we have.
Mm.
Yeah, so we don't have to ramp up the cost. So both sides of it being looked at. And I, that's another area that really, really an opportunity in Dilium that we can reap on and will bring a lot of value to the organization.
And when I hear you, you tend to think about it from optimizing the three core businesses, right? At what point will it be the case where you say, actually, this portfolio doesn't work. I need to add more synergies to it. How do you look at it from a portfolio standpoint? Would you be adding more business lines or subtracting?
No, there will be no subtraction at the moment. I'll be very honest with you, Philip. I think there'll be more addition. Yeah, we are looking at more, but again, we are not going to bite more than what we can chew. That's a mistake that a lot of service companies have done. We don't want to fall into the same line. Yeah, as you know, we have a strong balance sheet. Yeah,
yep.
Incredible organization, which is one of the reasons why I was attracted to Dilium. You know, and I will tell you something. One more thing is that the board that we have, I worked in Halliburton for a long, long time. I've dealt with many different people. In fact, I've dealt with Cheney when he was CEO. Yeah, but I have to say, Dilium is really an incredible board. I'm very impressed with them. They're really, really people who walk the talk and who really, and like I said, it gives me a wow factor. Incredible people, you know, with high integrity.
Well, clearly you believe that there is talent at the top, but, you know, just looking at the numbers dispassionately, and the sense I get from you is that it's important to be careful and cautious. But I'd like to throw a kind of a little spanner to this, right, where your gearing ratio is relatively healthy. Debt is cheap. Don't you want to strike when the iron is hot? Don't you want to go in now to these markets when you know that you've got the financial capacity to do so?
Good question. Good question. You know, basically you're asking me, it's in a depressed market, you get a better
value. Why don't you just speed up? Yeah, just go for gold.
It's a fair question. We are, again, 6 weeks in a job. It's too early for me to say. There are some things in the pipeline they've been looking at, and I will continue to look at it. Again, you know, you also have to understand, Philip, yeah, when the market is depressed, the buyers are also reluctant to sell, hoping for a better time. Yeah, it works both ways. Yeah.
And when you think about, when I hear you also, right, when you look at the opportunities to add to the portfolio, are they still quite services driven, or would you be diversifying beyond? Because one thing about the three core businesses, although they three do stand out quite separately, power distribution still contributes quite a large chunk of your business, right? I think over 50% of the business, or even 2/3 in a challenging time. And even your order book and your tender order book is also more than 50% for the power distribution. So in your view, right, how do you manage that risk, that concentration risk of being overly reliant on power and distribution then?
So, good question again. You know, that is why I'm here, okay? I'm going to keep on saying that until you get tired of it, yeah? So we are looking at a new CEO for... We have already hired a new CEO for Oilfield Services. And again, he's going to come from a very diverse background, worked outside, inside Malaysia, and worked in Middle East. In several multinationals, you know, spend some time in Schlumberger and also spend some time in Halliburton. I need strong people. You're absolutely right. You know, on the top side, like I said, I mentioned all the names. I think I missed up Dr. Vivi, you know, who's a very, very operational background. Again, incredible character, you know, person. Now, the focus is to build this bench. Yeah, build the bench and make sure that the bench is able to deliver. You know, let me tell you something, Philip. We have gone in, when in my last job, we have gone in and did a lot of acquisitions, and then to realize that, you know what, we are buying just people. And that people can leave tomorrow. We have to make sure that we are buying technology. Yeah? So it's a hard one. Everyone who sells will tell you wonderful stories. Yeah? But again, a lot of lessons learned, and I plan to utilize it at Dilium.
And let's now shift attention, because we're talking about, I think, getting it right for 2-3 years. But, you know, I'm sure you also have tasks to think very long term, right? Like 10, 20 years ahead. Now, when you look at the oil and gas industry, is your strategy guided by what the other oil and gas majors do in the long term as well? Because when you look at their strategy, it seems to be going towards sustainability, renewable energies. Some are moving to gas and hydrogen, algae and seaweed. What is Dilium's long-term plan then? Is that reflective of how your core customer is now at the moment?
Okay. Yes, my customers are all looking at renewable. We are not going to shy away from it, but I want to put some things in perspective. Yeah. If you look at, take away the coal, yeah, this oil and gas contribution to energy is about global, yeah, I'm not talking about Malaysia, global, it's about 55%, yeah, today. Mm. In 2030, according to IEA, the prediction is that it's going to be 54%. A bigger market, a bigger pie, a drop of 1%. So there is a limitation as to what, how much renewal can bring to the table. Yeah, you can't ramp up very quickly. And if you look at into the Malaysian sector per se, we don't have the luxury of wind. Yeah, it's impossible. The only option we have is solar, yeah, biomass and so on. So again, the current tariff rates and so on, the return on investment, it'll be a hard sell. That's the reality of it.
Yeah, so the reality is this is not something you would pursue in 10 years, right? But maybe beyond that, is that fair?
Yes, but we are not just looking at renewables. We are also looking at other opportunities. Mm. For example, batteries, you know, chargings. So those are the things that will become an area of focus because it's still energy, yeah? It's still looking into the energy. We would like to confine ourselves into energy and maybe venture a little bit into digital. Data is something that's that I have been, you know, been thinking about. Again, I'm giving away too much.
No, I think it's fine to give away too much with us. But I do want to just, you know, drive to this point that you have a task ahead to fundamentally reshape the business, right? You need to get new people in to improve the top line and bottom line. You are going to look at changing your portfolio in the short term, potentially even adding more lines. All this will require quite a bit of investment. So I guess for all of your investors, right, are you planning to change your dividend policy? Because in the past, it's been pretty healthy. In view that you have these potentially very ambitious plans, are we expecting a change in your dividend policy then?
I would like to take the question slightly different, Philip. Yeah, the issue is not the dividend policy. The issue here is that we have a very healthy balance sheet. Mm-hmm. That's what people, you know. So we can, I can't comment on the dividend policy. We can continue with the dividend policy because we do. If you look at my peers, I don't want to name any one of them, but if you look around, we probably have one of the healthy balance sheet. Yeah, very healthy balance sheet. The bank, the gearing ratio is probably one of the lowest I've seen in the industry. Yeah. So the issue is not about having the capacity to expand, you know, at the expense of dividend. No, it's not. It's about finding the right thing. We haven't, you know, in the past, probably they haven't found anything yet. The expectation is for me to do that, you know. Again, you know, like I told you earlier, you know, that's pretty much the mandate I came in with. You know, I was very clear with the board that I have to be given the free hand to run the business, yeah, because I have to make the decision and I will be accountable for it, yeah. I come from the industry where my performance is based on what I deliver. Yeah, not by rhetoric, by numbers, and so on. Again, you know, I'm because of maybe my age or whatever, I'm going to be a little bit cautious.
On The Breakfast Grill today, we speak to the CEO of oil and gas specialist Dilian Berhad, Raman Rao Abdullah. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.